The Gurus of How To, Al and Larry Ubell are joining us now, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York. They've been coming on this show even longer than I've been coming on this show. Then that's nearly 29 years, Al.
Yes, we've been here. We're a fixture. They hang us up every so often.
So we're gonna have one of your quizzes somewhere down the line. What's a fixture on the Leonard Lopate show? The answer is Al Ubell. Actually, we do have a quiz. Maybe we're going to throw it. We should throw it out right now and then move on to other stuff.
Let's do what you want. Go ahead.
Okay. The question this time, the quiz, we do this every time the Ubells visit us. There's a prize for the person who knows the answer is give us the name of an ornamental top on the end of a church pew. So this is something that's carved into the wood.
Yes, it's like a finial that comes up to the top, and it's in Gothic churches mostly.
A finial, okay.
Yeah, and you'll see it sometimes on the front facade. It's usually at the center above the door. You'll see a very ornamental Gothic door, and you'll see this triangular shaped element, and this would be at the top of it.
It's a flowery kind of thing.
Almost like fleur-de-lis.
Yes.
Okay. 212-433-9692 is the number to call if you know the answer. We can't take it on our show page or through Facebook or Twitter, but you can communicate to us about other matters that way. Mm-hmm. But we really need a call if you think you know the answer. 212-433-9692. Suddenly got very cold. Is there anything that we should be talking about before we start taking calls that about the problems that our listeners have?
Well, the idea is to keep warm and
that's the idea.
And make sure that the radiators are not blocked by furniture. Make sure they're cleaned out, vacuum out the dust, because the dust actually acts as an insulating value to the functionality of a radiator. The radiator, as it says, radiates heat, and that's what it's supposed to do. And if you block it, it's not going to do that.
Well, if you have ducts, what do? Take a vacuum cleaner and put it up to the ducts?
Well, actually, sometimes even the ductwork or the filter, if you have ductwork, the filter could get clogged up with dirt and debris and cat dander and all kinds of things. That filter has to be changed if you have a forced air heating system.
But as far as vacuuming out the ducts, yes, that is a good idea. But it's actually not so much for restricting the airflow, but it's actually to keep the building healthy. And there are companies that do duct cleaning. You can clean out quite a bit of the dust and debris from the openings, whether you take the air register off, because usually the air register is held on by two screws, one on each side. If it's a larger one, four screws. Or where the filter is in the combustion chamber, not the combustion chamber, but the air handler chamber, you can pull off the cover and vacuum around there. If you see dirt, just vacuum it up. But as far as getting back to other heating equipment like hot water, the most important thing about a hot water system is to make sure that the radiators are bled.
And I have to tell you, I'm guaranteeing that we're going to get at least four or five calls from people about knocking sounds from
the
radiator.
Yeah, called radiator banging.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that in a second. I just want to finish my thought.
Loud pipes.
Is about the hot water systems. If you have a hot water system, you should put your hand on, if it's a cast iron radiator, put your hand on the radiator. If the bottom of the radiator is hot and the top is cold, it means that the radiator is filled with air, and air does not transmit heat. You have to get the air out. And usually at the top of these radiators is a bleeder valve. You open up the bleeder valve until the water comes up. That fills the whole radiator up with water, and you'll get more heat out of that radiator.
But be ready to close it up as soon as the water starts coming out.
Right.
Otherwise, it's going to start gushing?
No, it doesn't. It's a small opening, so it doesn't, not a lot of it, but you should do this with a cup or a rag right in front of it, and then when it starts coming up, shut it off. And it doesn't have to be gorilla tight, and it shouldn't be too hard to loosen. There are keys that you could buy from the local hardware store or home center, which is about a dollar or two, that makes it easier to open and close these things. But that's what you should do.
Some of them work just with a regular screwdriver.
Well, most of them are dual purpose, but the little key works really well. As far as the banging is concerned, the banging is usually a function of improperly installed radiators or piping that was pitched wrong, and what you're pitched improperly, and what you're hearing is the live steam coming in contact with the water that's in the pipe or the radiator and flash boiling that water and causing it to bang. The best way to solve that problem is to pitch the radiator up a little on the side opposite the shutoff valve, the big valve at the floor, and you pitch it up on the opposite side of that. That is where usually the air vent is, and you pick it up, and the water will flow out properly. Also, another thing that causes it is the radiator valve being halfway open or halfway closed, and water, again, is pooling around the valve.
Yeah, you know, steam radiators don't have a throttling ability. It's either, as Larry says, it's either wide open or closed. But what happens if people get too hot in the room, what they do is they shut it off and they capture water inside the radiator. And then all of a sudden they open it up and all of a sudden they hear banging and everything else. So those are the things that you have to just look forward to and understand what you're doing and what you're not doing.
But on that same note, we also want to make sure that if you have windows that are leaking, I know it's not aesthetically pleasing, but putting plastic over the windows really does help, creates another air barrier. If you have some kind of leak around the window because it's not fitting properly, fix that. Any opening, like last night I was doing a little work in my house and I had a hole in the side of my wall, and the amount of cold air that was coming in through that hole was amazing.
Well, so, can a building be too airtight?
Yes, under the new kind of construction. That's the thing that we complain about, is that we can't live in a thermos bottle. You know, you got to have some sort of circulation. And there is this big push to make the building totally airtight. I think we may pay the piper for that in time to come. And all of a sudden, you wind up a deficiency in oxygen, or too much carbon dioxide, or too much other kind of gases. When you cook on a stove, whether it's an electric stove or something like that, you're burning oxygen also when you're cooking. And that's a big problem, that a building has to have some sort of fresh air coming into it somewhere.
But now, I want to just say, any building built before 1960 or so, I wouldn't worry so much about this problem. If you live in a pre-war, a brownstone, a townhouse or anything, they leak like sieves. There's nothing you can do. I don't care if you drench the thing in fiberglass. You're not going to seal it up. So I wouldn't worry. We're really talking about brand new housing stock. But I have to say that these days there are energy requirements, and they do a blower door test on these buildings. So you do have to have – you can't have a blower door test where you come up with no air exchange at all. That's unhealthy also. So there is a compromise in that, and it is important that both – but if you live in any of those older buildings, really don't worry.
Before we get to our listener questions, a lot of people have been calling in with answers to the quiz, which is come up with the name of the ornamental top at the end of a church pew. – Our number is 212-433-9692. We'll go through, as many of these as we can until we get the right answer, and then clear up some space for people to call in with questions. And we begin with Manny from Long Island. What do you think it is, Manny?
Hi, Manny.
Hi, how you doing, guys? I think it's a gargoyle.
A gargoyle is usually on the outside of a building, some kind of Romanesque or Gothic building that usually squirts water from a roof gutter or something like that. That's not what we're looking for.
Thank you for calling. And now we have, is it Nick? Hi, Nick.
Hello.
Yeah, Nick from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Would it be a trefoil?
A trapel?
A trefoil.
A trefoil? No, not at all.
Thank you. Bill? Hi, what do you think it is?
Hi, I think it's a crocket.
A crocket?
Right, as in Davy Crocket, a finial.
No, that's not it either.
And we thank you for your attempt anyway. We go now to Dale from Manhattan. Hi, Dale, what do you think it is?
I had thought it was a catrefoil.
A what kind of foil?
A catrefoil, which would have four leaves.
No, that's not it.
Actually, a lot of you are being very specific of the style, and we're looking for the generic term for this thing.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay, well.
All righty then.
There's still a chance in case you think you know the answer to the quiz. So let's go to some of the other calls that we've been receiving. Our guests are the gurus of how-to, Al and Larry Abell, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York. And we go now to Bruce from Chappaquiddick. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, it's Chappaqua.
Chappaqua, I'm sorry.
No, Chappaquiddick.
They all start with Chaps. Oh, I know what Chappaquiddick is. Yeah. Oh, boy.
Okay. Chappaqua. It's really
Chappaqua. And then I moved into a rental house, and it's infested with stink bugs. And when I say infested, it's like four maybe a week, one by one. Mm-hmm. end up somewhere in my living space. And, you know, most of the time they don't stink, but every now and then something aggravates them and they stink to high heaven. And I want to know if there's anything I can do outside of exterminating to get rid of them.
Actually, you could do it yourself. There are some insecticides that are purchased generically. But actually, if you get an exterminator that's licensed, he'll know exactly what to do, because usually on those kind of insects, you may have to change the chemicals a little bit, because you have to use one kind of chemical one time, one insecticide, and then a different type of chemical the next time, because those type of insects have the ability to adapt to the particular chemical and have a whole new colony that is not immune to the chemical, but can live in that environment. So an exterminator is necessary in that type of control.
But I'm also going to say that you're talking about a very specific bug now that you're having a problem with. And I have to tell you that my knowledge and my father's knowledge of this is limited as far as what causes. So where do stink bugs hang out?
Well, stink bug hangs out in any place where there's an attractant of food and water. And
how does that make it different than a cockroach?
Well, it is a little bit different.
Or a fruit fly.
It's a different species.
What I'm saying is that an exterminator may have a handle on why they're coming to you, because I've never had a problem with this, and this is really the first that you're having a problem with this. So I think that you need to find someone who's specific to that issue and figure out why you're having this particular issue.
There is a problem sometimes when you do the obvious thing, which is to Google the question, because I've had a fruit fly problem in my house. And I Googled it, and I found a lot of people making the same suggestion of what to do, which had to do with some kind of vinegar and a piece of fruit in a jar with Saran wrap over the top. Didn't work.
That's why I'm suggesting that maybe talk to a professional who actually deals with all kinds of bugs on a daily basis.
Let's go to Dina. Hi, Dina.
Hi. So I have a question. We have appearing in our bedroom only, as far as I know, a white, very sticky substance that keeps appearing mostly on the higher end of our bedroom, sometimes as low as waist high.
Mm-hmm.
We have no idea what it is. We've asked the contractor, our cleaning woman. We've checked the air conditioner filter, and it almost appears as if it's coming from the fan and it's being spread throughout.
Okay. Let me ask you a couple. I need to ask you a couple questions. This is appearing on the walls?
Yes.
It's appearing on the walls, and you have painted walls?
Mm-hmm.
It looks like spatter.
Does it look like spatter?
That you plug up the holes with?
No. Does it look like a splatter on the wall?
Yes, but it's very, you know, it's one every 5 feet, perhaps. And it happens only once in a while.
Okay.
I think I saw this movie.
Yeah.
Exactly. And when we're away, we come back and it's not there.
And you don't have dogs or cats or anything?
No.
No.
The only thing I could do is if you could take a picture of it and send it to our website, to our email address, we'll take a look at it, and we'll call you back if you give us your telephone number, and we'll try to analyze what it is.
So give the address?
You can send it to me, alvin@accuratebuilding.com.
But include your phone number along with the picture.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Because it seems it could be something. What kind of heating system do you have?
The radiator.
So you have radiator heat, and...
But it's relatively new. It hasn't been happening.
How old of a building is this?
It's very old. I don't know, from the 1800s, but it's very new. It's only in the last 6 to 9 months.
And is it happening randomly everywhere, or is it happening above a radiator, or is it?
It's randomly everywhere in our bedroom.
I gotta take a look.
It's almost as if it's an insect, but it's so sticky it doesn't seem anything organic.
Well, yeah. Well, it could be an insect. It could be. I have to say that, you know, bees and stuff like that, but that would seem so unusual, and you would notice that, you know.
I think it's the pod people.
Well, yeah, sometimes the lava.
That does happen. I've had that pod person problem before in the past.
Yeah, but also I've seen on painted surfaces sometimes a caterpillar will climb across something, and then the caterpillar disappears but leaves a residue at that location, and that becomes like an adhesive for the particulate matter in the atmosphere.
Dina, thank you so much for calling. Your question is even tougher than the quiz that the U-Bells have come up with. We are going to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll get some more possible answers to the quiz. We'll also be taking your calls at 212-433-9692 about various home repair problems. You can write to us on our on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle is at Leonard Lopate, or write to us on our show page at WNYC.org. Stay with us for more. We're back with the gurus of how to, Al and Larry U-Bell. And we have some more people, intrepid listeners, who think they know the answer to the quiz, which is, Larry?
Which is, name the top raised ornamental carving on the end of a pew found in many Gothic churches.
Okay. Frank from Long Island, you're on the air. What do you think it is?
Frank?
Frank?
Yes?
What do you think it is?
Is it called a Rosetta?
No.
No. No.
No.
No.
Okay. Now we have Abram from Norwalk, Connecticut. Hi. What do you think it is?
Poppy head.
Congratulations.
And let me ask the obligatory question. How come you know this?
Oh, I cheated. I looked it up. I'm sorry.
Oh, cheater, cheater. Once a cheater, always a cheater.
So what does Abram get? It's Abram?
Abram.
Abram, okay.
He gets the U-Bell Energy Saving Guide for Homeowners by Alvin U-Bell and George Merlis.
Actually, I thought it's called Save Money, Save Energy by Alvin U-Bell and George Merlis.
It's the same book.
And so, Abram, what you should do is hang on. I'm going to put you on hold, and one of my producers will take your address so we can send you that book.
Oh, thank you very much.
Okay.
And thanks for listening to WNYC.
We have a number of people who have been writing in. Patrick on Twitter asks, my hot water suddenly takes a long time to get hot. Is this due to the heat being on as well?
The hot water takes a long time. It depends upon the distance between where your sink is and how far away the water heater is. Because the water that's in the pipe from that water heater to the to where you're at is going to get cooled off because it'll dissipate the heat from what's in the pipe.
So wait, the pipe has a lot of cooled water sitting in it that has to be pushed out by the hot water?
Yeah, you have to empty it out in order to hot water to follow it in. That's in a small buildings. One and two family houses have that problem. Also, three and four and five family houses have that problem. But larger buildings are supposed to have a circulator system that's supposed to be working. In fact, I have a problem right now with one building where the superintendent accidentally bypassed a whole section of apartments trying to fix the plumbing system. And so those are the things
he fixed
that,
it good, huh?
He fixed it better. So good that they all get only cold water.
But actually, one of the things you have to realize is that in the wintertime, there's a couple of things going on. One, that these areas, you have to clear out all the cold water. You then have to warm the pipe up because in order for, you know, you can't put hot water through a cold pipe, so the pipe has to warm up. And the third thing that's happening is in the cold weather, the area around the pipe is now colder. So it takes a lot more energy to get it. I find that in my bathroom, for instance, I find that I have to turn the valve a little bit to the more hot side because two things, you're mixing it with colder water and a lot of heat loss is going on. Also, the tub gets cold, the shower is cold, everything's cold. Unless you live in a pre-war building that you're opening the windows because you got too much heat.
Yeah, and besides that, this is a dangerous condition, by the way. When you have cold water and you try to give it all the hot water you can, you get into the shower, and all of a sudden comes out boiling hot water, and you'll get a third-degree burn. This is a dangerous thing. You have to speak to someone who's a technician who knows how to regulate that water so that the water comes out at the right temperature.
Can't you just turn it on and wait until the water is the right temperature and then get into the shower?
I think you're missing an element that he's talking about adjusting the heat, the temperature in a house and what your water temperature should be at, or if you have a boiler that also produces hot water, what the temperature of the aquastat on the boiler should be, and therefore you can actually regulate this. And sometimes if you don't have the wherewithal to do it, you need to hire someone so you don't scald your children.
Yeah, because there's also the mixing of the cold and the hot water in order to make tempered water that's compatible with your body temperature.
A listener in Brooklyn asks, I want to convert my steam boiler from oil to gas. Are there any pitfalls that I should look out for?
Well, there are many boilers that most of the boilers, and generally speaking, are adaptable to either gas or oil. But you're going to have to speak to a technician to see if they have the retrofitting equipment that fits into your particular boiler.
But I'm going to interject that if you're switching a boiler from oil to gas, the boiler itself is probably not the most efficient boiler, and probably it would be in your best interest to actually change the boiler out altogether to a, because now they make gas boilers that are 95% efficient, and so with that level of efficiency, you will get your money back in a very short order. Also, with the fact that you're switching over to gas, which is 1.5 times more economical than the oil anyway, so I would not try.
And less polluting.
Less polluting. I would try not to retrofit.
Another listener asks about the best ways to insulate a through-the-wall air conditioner for the winter.
Well, the through-the-wall air conditioning, the most important thing is that if the air conditioner sometimes is smaller than the sleeve or something like that, you should buy some fiberglass insulation and stuff it in to the cracks all the way around. As far as putting something on the inside, they do make covers with almost some of them with a zipper, some with them Velcro, some with a little string that you tie around. And that is like an insulating blanket that you place on the inside. Don't put any insulating blankets on the outside because you want that to be to the atmosphere so no water stays in those units and the water evaporates out with all the dirt
and everything. But if you can, you could take the cover off, and if you just put a garbage bag over or some plastic over the whole air conditioner and push the cover back on, that will stop a lot of the airflow. And then around the outside metal, you can maybe attach some towels or blankets or something thick to give it an insulating value. And you could do that pretty much at home or have someone sew an air conditioning cozy.
Josh from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Josh.
Hi. So I have a problem with heating. You were talking about steam heat earlier. I've done everything you've talked about, replacing the shutoff valve, pitching the radiator, changing the air valve, and I still have knocking into the radiators. It's a 100-year-old building in Manhattan. And I've been told that the next step is to tear up the floor and repitch the pipe underneath the floor back to the riser.
That could be the issue, that whoever made – two things could have occurred. They either pitched the pipe wrong – or they used pipe that's of insufficient diameter to suspend itself, and now you have a lull in the pipe. In other words, the pipe is bent, and the water is pooling at the bottom of the center of the pipe.
But that pipe that he's talking about that is in the concrete floor on the floor.
He didn't say concrete floor.
Is that
it has a concrete slab, and then there's sleepers underneath, and it runs between the sleepers back to the riser.
But that may be
the original pipe to the building.
But
was fine when I moved in, and it's no longer fine.
Yeah, okay. But that may be the condensate return. That's filled with water all the time.
It's a single pipe system.
But the single pipe system has a condensate return. The riser goes up and over, fills all the radiators, and then the condensate pipe keep going down till the end of the line and then drains back to the boiler.
It also could be that there's a blockage in the line.
That's true, too. That could be.
How does that get in there?
Corrosion.
Because
what happens is, you ever notice that when you drain the boiler, all that mud comes out?
Yeah, well, I'm not the guy who does that. It's a 48 unit building, but I've seen that.
Well, what's happening is that there's mud in the boiler from the corrosion factor, and that could be clogging up that pipe, causing the water to pool in that area.
Yeah, but you just talked about a 48-story building, 48-apartment house. There may be in your boiler, whether it be steel or cast iron, there are what they call mud legs on the bottom that have to be cleaned out every so often.
They clean the boiler they do the annual cleaning every year.
Yeah, but even when they clean the boiler every year, they don't clean out the mud legs where the water comes back. And what happens is you do get what they call splashing on the inside of the boiler, which causes the banging.
Thank you so much for your call.
I mean, the point of that whole banging thing is that it is an arduous process to figure out why a particular banging issue is occurring. Sometimes it's as simple as a re-pitch, but other times it's a way more complicated and you have to really do some major analysis. I want to say on this one person's side is that they may have to – this is not his – it's not his equipment. It's actually the building's equipment, and therefore whatever repairs go on shouldn't be on his dime.
Brian, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? You guys helped me before. Appreciate the program. So the building is 1910. I think the folder is missing. It's a 2 3/4 story wood frame house in the Bronx. And I've over the years, I've knocked down some of the plaster walls, and I discover that there's brick in between the studs.
Right.
And I don't know what the purpose of this brick is. And at first I said I'm going to remove it to put insulation, but then I realized that was very labor-intensive.
Well, that's actually called nogging.
Yes.
It's called nogging.
And doesn't the brick work as insulation?
Well no, it was actually...
Not much.
It was there as fireproofing, actually. Okay. It was there because all these wood frame buildings were built up next to each other, so they decided to put this masonry in street to try to stem the fire from going from building to building. Didn't really work that well. But anyway, you can remove it if you want, but it really, I have to tell you, it doesn't have any real insulating value because concrete, masonry, bricks, concrete block, 2 feet of concrete insulate the same as 1 inch of fiberglass. So it doesn't really have much of an R value.
Thank you for calling.
So what was his question?
The question was, should he remove it?
Could I remove it? And
it's up to you.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And also, not only is it a lot of work, how do you get rid of it?
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, it's easy. They come out easy enough, but then it's all very heavy. So mm-hmm. what I've done in some places is just put stud wall in front to make the depth for insulation. Does that make sense to you?
That does make sense, and that's great.
Right.
Okay, thank you for calling again. Nick, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Nick.
Yeah, hello?
Yes, Nick.
How are you?
Good, what's up?
Nick, we have very little time, and we wanted to get you in here.
Okay, thanks. I have a small leak in the roof in my living room.
Yeah.
I have a flat roof, and the rainwater collects to the center on top of the roof. If I replace that gutter, would it stop the problem?
Well, it depends on why the leakage is occurring. If it's occurring in the middle of the roof because you have a ponding condition that is occurring, in other words, a puddle in your roof, it tells me that, A, you probably have a broken, either broken sheathing or a broken roof rafter, and that needs to be fixed to stop that ponding from occurring, and that's what's causing extra stress on the roofing material, causing the roofing material to fail. So I would say that you need to investigate what's going on underneath that area first and see if you need to repair that and then, flatten the roof out if that's in fact what's occurring.
Yeah.
I put an entire coat on the roof over the summer, and I was just wondering, would they replace the gutter alone?
Well, replacing the gutter is not the problem that I see, that you have a leak in the middle. What happened is by putting in more material in the middle in order to fill it up, it's just putting more load on the broken or defective section of the joist. What I would do is find out what's happening in the cock loft or underneath the rafter spaces and see if you could jack that up in order to make that not concave but convex, so that the water disperses out to the edges of the building rather than to the middle.
We have about a minute left, and a caller asked us to ask you if you're going to be away for a month, should you turn the water off?
The water off in the building? Yes, I do recommend turning the water off, but keep the heat on so things don't freeze. But you can turn the water off, so if something does go amiss, you won't have water all over the place.
Now, when you say keep the heat on, keep it on low?
Keep it on low. Yeah, keep it at 50 degrees.
All thermostats are designed that you can bring it all the way down to about 40 degrees, but it won't let you go any lower because that would be the fault of the thermostat. So that'll keep the house warm enough so no freezing takes place.
Another listener says he has cave crickets in his basement. Do you know anything about cave
crickets?
Crickets
is the same thing. You got to find out. Crickets are almost like roaches.
It's like all of them. What's attracting them? Why are they coming to you? And then stop that behavior from occurring, whether it's water, open water. People have open pits in the basement that are filled with water. That's a great source, great watering hole for all these animals.
Insects. And also could be sewage, which is also a food for the roaches and the cockroaches and the crickets.
So you're saying pretty much the problem, the insect problem, is the same in all cases, although sometimes the things they're, that we have to use to get rid of them
are
might
different,
change.
Are different, yeah. But yeah. Usually it's an attractant, either food, the, water, or an environment that they want to be in. Maybe, also, I got to say one thing, is that also he might also have a moisture condition down there, and dehumidification would certainly help that problem.
In fact, you've suggested getting a dehumidifier for basements.
Well, I do. It's part of my religion.
Okay, well, Larry Ubell, who is a member of the Dehumidifying Church,
yes,
will be back with us along with his father, Alvin Ubell, on February 12th. So I'm looking forward to that. Meanwhile, people can reach you at Larry.
LarryUbell@gmail.com or at al@ubell.com or
yes.
Al at Accurate.
And what's going to happen on February 12th?
We're going to come back and show all of America how to go forth and fix, save energy, money, and
do it safely.